33. Standing on the shoulders of a giant.
Ah, you are alive.
Good, Mr. Socrates said, putting on his top hat. A few of my other agents weren't so lucky. His left eye was bruised, and despite his jaunty manner, he looked tired and somehow older. His suit needed pressing. Tharpa stood behind him. A neatly stitched slash now embellished his jawline. So, Modo, what exactly is the contraption? Mr. Socrates asked. Modo wanted to grab Mr. Socrates and hug him, but he had enough control not to blurt out his joy.
Mr. Socrates, your eye.
What? It's none of your concern, Modo, he snapped. I asked you a question.
Yes, sir,
he answered, forcing himself to concentrate. We saw it being built in a chamber below St. James's Square. The missing orphans power it somehow. Fur is in control of it. Mr. Socrates watched calmly as the giant smashed its claw into the windows of Westminster Hall and dragged out a hapless occupant. Impressive, he said. The guild engineered this right under our noses. I'd thought the young men who attacked their parents were the real threat, but no, they were merely a decoy, throwing us off the track of the larger plan. This machine is, well, beyond all imagination.
Prince Albert is part of the machine, Octavia said.
He is? Mr. Socrates reached into his greatcoat, took out a small telescope, and looked through it. I see. That complicates things. And Miss Hackandottir?
Underground, Octavia said. She said they'll sink the machine in the Thames when they're done.
That's not good news.
Not good news, Octavia said. That's a bloody understatement.
Watch your tongue, Miss Milkweed, Mr. Socrates said. Even in times of crisis, it's important you maintain your composure.
My composure is fine, thank you very much, considering what has been done to so many orphans.
Modo became distracted from their quarrel by a niggling thought. There was something about the giant he just couldn't put his finger on. It was made of tons of iron, sheet metal, gears. Even with so many children built into the body of the machine, it was impossible that they could bear the weight of all of that and keep the giant standing upright for so long.
Something else was at play. But what?
A team of muscular brown horses pulled a large, steel-plated carriage across the old palace yard. It stopped at Mr. Socrates' signal. I received a telegram informing me there was an event down here. I brought reinforcements. The doors opened and soldiers in black uniforms climbed out, carrying rifles. Three unhooked a small field gun from the back of the carriage. In a few minutes our problems will be solved, Mr. Socrates said.
But what about the children?
Octavia asked incredulously. A flash of concern crossed Mr. Socrates' face. We will do our best to prevent unnecessary deaths. It is all we can do. He turned toward an officer. When you have your weapon set up, fire. Begin by aiming at its head, at the man who's controlling the machine. Do what you can to avoid the children, and most especially the young man at the center of the giant. You won't want to kill Prince Albert. The officer went pale.
Prince Albert, sir?
Good, you were listening. So, aim well. The officer saluted and marched back to his men.
There must be a better way, Modo said. What if Oppie was struck by a shell?
You can't fire at it. People are dying as we speak, Mr. Socrates said. Important people. You have to make hard choices in this business. We can only do our best. At that moment, the field gun's boom nearly deafened Modo. The shell struck the metal shield behind Fur and exploded, clouding the shoulders of the giant with smoke.
Excellent shot, Mr. Socrates shouted.
But when the smoke cleared, they could see that Fur was unharmed. As though the shell had been little more than a pesky fly, he continued to bash at another part of the building. We'll have to try another approach, Mr. Socrates said. Modo continued to wrestle with the notion that the machine worked at all. He felt in his coat pocket and pulled out the torn piece of paper that had Hyde's notations. He skimmed it and two lines jumped out at him.
Harnesses the inner potency. This is the discovery. If this energy can be directed through a filament to gyro.
There were filaments all along the giant, glowing with light, so some kind of energy was lighting them. Not electricity. The source had to be on the giant. The filaments were attached to the children. Gyroscopes were spinning, proving that there was an energy source.
Harnesses the inner potency.
Could it be, said Modo, that Dr. Hyde has discovered an energy inside the children that powers the giant? He held the paper up to Mr. Socrates. We found a portion of Dr. Hyde's notes in their experimental chamber. Mr. Socrates took the scrap, sniffed at the scent of sewer that still clung to it, then examined it. This is unreadable. I can't make a decision based on a fragment of illegible handwriting and a guess. But, sir, I'm certain that I'm correct. Even if you were, Modo, what difference could it make now? He turned away. Men, load. Aim for the legs.
No!
Modo pulled on Mr. Socrates' arm, and for an angry moment he felt as though he were that child in Ravenscroft again. Mr. Socrates jerked his arm out of Modo's grip. You've done your part. We'll handle everything from here. Modo took a step back, dejected. He watched all the children moving as one. He thought of Oppie and how the boy had delivered him his food, taken care of him. There were 100 Oppies in there. They didn't deserve this. There had to be a better way. He studied Mr. Socrates as he marched about, giving more orders. He doesn't see the children, Modo thought. Doesn't know them or their lives. He was never poor. Modo couldn't control himself any more. He began running with his telltale lope toward the giant.
Hold fire! Mr. Socrates shouted. Modo, I order you to return. Modo!
Octavia cried. Her voice made him falter, but Modo charged on. He stormed across the grass, past the statue of Richard the Lion-Hearted. The giant had its back to him, and Fur was busy driving it toward another pillar, which he smashed. More people were flushed out of the building, while others looked out the windows, unaware of the danger. The children were still silent, pushing and pulling with their legs and spines, faces set in angry determination. The filaments running from their shoulder bolts glowed throughout the machine, sparks shooting. Their life energy. Modo was certain of it now. Modo leapt at the metal ankle of the machine and latched onto it. The moment he touched the steel, the hair on his arms stood on end, as though an electrical charge were going through him. He found himself face to face with a girl, her eyes wide and her features deformed by the tincture. The bolts in her shoulders held her tight inside the frame. Filaments had been attached to each shoulder bolt. One glowed bright red, and the girl bent her legs at the same time as all the children in her row. As they lifted their legs, so too did the giant.
"I'll help you," Modo cried.
The girl made no response. Her eyes were blank. He climbed up the calf. The machine hissed as it moved. If he could free them, one by one, surely that would stop the giant and Fur. But there were too many of them, and he had no way of undoing the bolts. His best hope was to stop Fur. He climbed to the hips, then clambered over to the iron spine and headed up it, careful not to get his fingers crushed in the moving vertebrae. He imagined tomorrow's papers with drawings depicting England's own children destroying the heart of the empire. Fur smashed a gargoyle, taking out the wall behind it. Modo scrambled onto the shoulders and found his balance on the small deck. Fur had his back to him, focused on the guards who were firing at him. The giant reached down, swept them aside, then lifted its leg to step on one. Now that he was so close, what to do? Fur was belted in behind the levers, his back and head protected by the metal shell. Close up, Modo could see how much the head was like a giant helmet housing Fur's body. The man sucked on a cigar as if he were out on a stroll, the smoke drifting into the air. The arms of his suit had torn, revealing his own metal limbs.
Fur!
Octavia called. She stood a few yards in front of the giant.
Fur! You're surrounded! Surrender now!
Fur exhaled laughter and smoke. Then, to Modo's horror, he brought the giant's arm down toward her.